This is started. Okay. Good morning, Monday, January 31st, last day of this month, 2005. I hereby open this meeting of the House Committee on Trade and Economic Development. And I'd like to give the chairman what you have.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I have several things that have come in since previous meetings related to previous meetings, so I thought the members would want to have this. I'll distribute these pretty soon here. This first package is from the Department of Agriculture International Trade people. It provides more information on their agricultural export trends. We have information on a Brand Oregon recruiting California businesses. It's Oregon. I'll distribute that. That was a news release from this past week. We have information from the Oregon Association of Counties. You've got a very small copy of their PowerPoint presentation. They brought an enlarged one for you. And then I have one copy of this that I'll pass around. This describes an open house at the Port of Portland. They have done some improvements to Terminal 6, and it's on the 12th of February. I'll let you look at that.
Okay. So why don't you you want to distribute
that
now?
Okay. I'll give those one. You can look.
Okay. As Jim distributing the materials, I just want to give you the little heads up. On this Wednesday, we are going to have a Jobs Plus bill, which we passed maybe it's 1993, and we are going to find out where that Jobs Plus bill at this time, whether it's still working good or not. We are going to look at this Wednesday. And then this coming Friday, we are going to visit the Oregon Lottery Office. And we are going to have a first-hand some information to look at what's going on over there. So I think it's going to be a good field trip. And according to the information I have from the Representative Dallum, did I pronounce it correct?
You did good.
Well,
you did well. You done good.
Thank you. Trying to improve. And we are going to have a public hearing at Gadal's, where the Representative Dallum is representing that area. And it's February 25. So please clear your the day for our trip to the Dallas. Do you have anything to share for that meeting?
It looks as though we'll have two sessions, one in the morning, break for lunch, and then go to another session. The people in the Dalles, even from this weekend, are excited to have us. I'm sure that we'll see a lot of economic development plans and economic development problems from the west side of the mountain.
Or the east side, pardon me.
That we're in the right place.
Thank you very much. I understand you told me last week we are going to have a good lunch also down there.
Yeah, we'll have a nice lunch.
All right. And then we are going to have one over there, and also hopefully one at the Beaverton area, high-tech area. And so we'll see how it's going to move on. Good morning. All right. And with that, I would like to have a open informational meeting with Oregon forestry industry, especially on the issues of clusters. And do I have Leslie Lehman? Okay, thank you very much. And please come up. Now, would you like to be yourself alone, or would you like to invite someone else? This gentleman is Eric Hobby. Thank you very much. And also the Leslie Lehman, Executive Director of Oregon Forest Resources Institute, and Eric Hobby, Consulting Economist, E.B. Hobby and Company, and Greg Miller. Thank you very much. Good morning.
Good Good morning.
And Oregon, California Government Affairs Manager, Warehouses Company. Welcome, lady and gentlemen. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if I could interrupt
just
for a moment, I just wanted to put this in perspective. We had testimony from several economists at the beginning of the session and from the Oregon Business Council about the importance of clusters, and that's why we invited the Oregon Forest Industries people to come and talk about their cluster activities and the prospects for their success in our economy in the coming years.
Okay, when you begin, could you give us some, in a simple language, what the cluster means so that we can understand better?
We're going to try to do that.
Thank you.
Chairman Lim and members of the committee, we have a study to present to you today that talks about the forest sector in Oregon and its prospects in the economy, and it is based on cluster concepts. So along the way, we hope to address your question specifically. I wanted to just put this in a little bit of context. I am the director of the Oregon Forest Resources Institute, and the legislature created the institute in the early 90s to provide public forestry education and also landowner education in sound forest management. So that's our charge from the legislature. And we're here today at your request to present the results of a recent economic study on the contributions and potential of Oregon's forest sector, and also to hear the perspective of a major Oregon Forest Products producer on their view of economic clusters as described in the Oregon Business Plan. And we brought copies of the study with us today for you to peruse at your leisure, and also a summary of the 2005 Oregon Business Plan Forest Sector Initiative and articles on these initiatives that have appeared recently in Oregon Business Magazine. Before you hear about the findings of the Institute's study from its author, I wanted to explain to you a little bit about our objectives for commissioning it. Between 1986 and 2001, timber harvest levels declined in Oregon by about 60%. Most of that decline occurred on federal forest lands. And during that period, high-tech replaced the forest sector as Oregon's top employer, and rural Oregon, as a consequence, suffered a particularly serious economic setback. OFRI commissioned the study because so many Oregonians had questions about what to expect from the forest sector in the future, and because so much industry restructuring has resulted from this combination of federal land being unavailable for harvest and also the increasingly intense global competition in wood supply. So we wanted the study to identify the contributions of the sector to Oregon's economy, as well as what are our best opportunities to enhance those contributions while maintaining our environmental commitments. And this is the first major economic research on the forest sector since a landmark study that forest economist John Buter, who some of you may know, conducted for the Institute and for the Oregon Business Council nearly a decade ago. The study is built on assumptions behind the Board of Forestry's Forestry Program for Oregon and also the Oregon Business Plan's Forest Sector Initiative. And its findings were based on existing research, but also on new economic analysis and interviews with knowledgeable stakeholders. I believe the findings of this study can help us draw attention to the economic potential of our forests in a way that's compatible with environmental contributions, ensure a more stable timber supply, retain and rebuild forestry infrastructure, and help Oregon position itself to compete successfully in international and domestic markets. It gives us a platform from which to help refocus public discourse about the importance of Oregon's forest sector, moving from what we've seen over the last couple of decades, an almost exclusive focus on a range of environmental challenges, and those are all very important. But we've done that at the expense of retaining our focus on the economic opportunities that are important to a strong, diversified statewide economy. And this broader vision is consistent, we believe, with public values, which our polls show have moved from seeing environmental and economic benefits as trade-offs with each other, in conflict with each other, to being both and. Oregonians expect us to be able to deliver both, and we believe we can. So the take-home point made by the study is that Oregon's forest sector today is robust and poised to contribute more to economic diversity and financial well-being in our state, especially in rural communities where it is still the primary source of employment and prosperity. The wood products industry that survived the recession of the last decade and the dramatic declines in federal harvest is lean, resilient, and competitive, making high-quality wood products in high-tech mills from timber primarily grown on private forest land. During the recent economic downturn, one thing became very clear. Oregon cannot achieve statewide prosperity by putting all of its eggs in the high-tech basket any more than we could in years past by keeping them all in the natural resources basket. The forest sector and high-tech are the two mainstays of Oregon's economy, two industries where the state needs to be fully engaged in encouraging innovation and competitive advantage in order to do better economically in both good times and bad. One of the recommendations coming out of the study and the Oregon Business Plan is that Oregon develop a state economic development strategy for the forest sector. And I'm pleased to report that the governor recently charged the Board of Forestry with leading that effort, a strategy that integrates environmental, social, and economic priorities. And so with that as background, I'm pleased to introduce Eric Hovey, who will present the results of the study he conducted for us on the forest sector. And along the way, he will explain economic cluster strategy that is central to the study and to the Oregon Business Plan.
Okay. Before we move on, do we have any questions from the panel here?
One quick question, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Buckley.
Yes, thank you. Can I ask, is there a timetable for the development of the state economic development strategy for the forest sector?
I don't know if they've set a specific timetable, but I know they see it as a priority, and they're fully engaged in it. So I'm sure they'll be working on it as fast as they can.
Just one quick follow-up.
Do you have any...
No, I think that's correct.
All right. Ken, would you please follow up to give us a date as soon as you possibly can and when we can expect to see that study?
I will.
Thank you.
Representative Dallow.
Yes, when this strategy is developed, does that include federal forest land or is that just state and private land?
It's, I believe, a strategy for the state.
For the state.
Mm-hmm.
All right. No. Yes. Eric Hugo, please.
Thank you, and good morning, committee and members, and Chair Lim. I appreciate the chance to talk to you today about work that we've had the opportunity to complete on behalf of the Oregon Forest Resources Institute. And as was mentioned earlier, as I hope as I go through the presentation, I'll have a chance to talk a little bit about the forest sectors we traditionally defined it, which is really kind of the starting point for our work, but also a concept of a broader forest cluster. And I know you've heard some in the past about other business cluster activities in the state, and I'll try to apply what it may mean to the forest, to the forest products industry, and to broader forestry activity in general. Let me just begin by noting, as Leslie Lehman has said, that this is the first major forest sector economic research that has been conducted for about the last 10 years. There have been a lot of changes that have taken place within the state's economy and more specifically within the forest sector as well over that time period. Most notably, we've gone from a position from a peak year of timber harvest in 1986 over about 8 billion board feet per year till the year in 2001 of about 3.4 billion board feet, a drop in effect of 60% in terms of total harvest, most of which occurred, most of the decline occurring on federal lands. And as noted, high tech has replaced the forest sector as the state's largest employer during this time, and we've also seen rural economies of the state in decline. The question that really is posed, I think, that's front and center in the work that we conducted is the question, given all the things that have happened over the last 1 to 2 decades, and as we look forward now into the future, what really is the forest sector's role in Oregon's economy? What contributions is it making today? What contributions can it be expected to make for the future? Just some thoughts in terms of kind of overall observations or the bottom line and some conclusions, I think, number one of which is that the forest sector continues to be important to the state's economy. It's likely to continue to be in the future, and especially for the prosperity of rural communities that really have increasingly lagged the rest of the state over the last 10 to 15 years. One thing that we do notice is definitely occurring as we go out and we talk to companies that are involved in the wide range of forest sector activities, logging contractors, mill operators, and others, is that there appear really to be two strategies that are taking place simultaneously and that are important to recognize. One is the change in the marketplace, which is much more of a global marketplace for forest products and for timber now, so that means the companies are competing on a global commodity market at the same time that some companies and others are also looking at specialty niches, places where they can offer competitive advantage that others do not. And as we look into the future, it's going to be important in terms of the strategic approach, that there be a strategic approach that address both the commoditization of the industry as well as being able to enhance those specialty opportunity areas. Stability of supply is critical to maintaining the state's competitive advantage. As we talked to, we conducted interviews with a number of players from people involved in land management to mills. Stability of supply is still front and center on people's minds. I think we're in a position that's more stable now than it's been in the past. Actually, that offers some opportunity for the future, but there's still any questions on the table. There's opportunity for more jobs and revenues, and that can occur without diminishing the commitment to environmental values, and we'll talk a little bit about some of the scenarios and alternatives that we've taken a look at. And finally, as Leslie London mentioned, there is the opportunity now to, I think there's a coalition of interest that suggests this is time to develop a statewide forest sector economic development strategy, including from sources such as the Oregon Business Plan Forest Sector Initiative. Our work was, as I mentioned, was conducted by our firm. We worked together with FP Marketing Solutions, which is Dr. Eric Hansen at Oregon State University. As part of our process, in addition to looking at prior studies and research and current data on employment and other economic indicators, we also interviewed about 50 stakeholders that represented a broad cross-section of industry, landowner, environmental and academic perspectives, and throughout we had active collaboration with a steering committee and an expert review panel, together with fairly interactive involvement with the OFRI Board of Directors. This just gives you a sense of some of the meetings involved in the steering committee and on the expert review panel, really, again, reflecting our desire to get input along the way and make sure that we were not missing kind of any critical issues or elements or information as we proceeded. The objectives really were threefold. They were to identify the contributions of the forest sector to the state's economy, look for best opportunities that would be compatible with environmental and social goals as well as economic goals, and pay special attention to some opportunities, focused opportunities with secondary wood products, small and large logs, and the Grand Oregon concept that I know you're hearing about from some other industry sectors as well. There are a couple of critical building blocks to our work. We didn't want to go out and reinvent the wheel. We want to build on other initiatives already in place. A key one is the forestry program for Oregon by the Oregon Board of Forestry. And I'll talk a little bit more as we move down the path here about some of the specific areas in which we're building on that, especially in terms of an approach to forest management and looking at alternatives for improved economic value. We also work from the Oregon Business Plan. As I mentioned, that has specifically referenced the need to build a statewide economic strategy for the forest cluster. A couple of critical needs. We're really trying to step outside of and beyond many of the old conflicts, looking into the future, recognizing that many of those issues are settled for better or worse, and that it's time to move forward and adopt a common vision for how the forest sector can continue to play a substantial, if not enhanced, economic role for the state.
Excuse me. And yes. Could you go on? Could you give us some examples of what has been the conflict and what has been the common visions?
Well, let me just give you a little sense of from the conflict side. Actually, on this slide here, if you look at the brown line that shows the total forest harvest going back to the 1980s, where we were at about around 8 billion board feet at the peak, and then dropped down to less than half that harvest level as we came into the 1990s, and we're now come back up to about $4 billion. I think one of the conflicts really was the environmental issues versus and land supply issues and management issues, especially at the federal level, and the way that played out in terms of substantially reduced timber harvest. As you can see, that took place mostly with federal forest. It also took place, but actually to much lesser degree, on private lands and on other public lands, including state lands, which were relatively stable. And as you can see, there's been a little bit of movement up and down with the private lands that are the blue line on the chart. But in effect, the private lands have historically and to the present time still continue to contribute somewhere in the 3 billion to 3.5 billion board feet a year type of range, and that has been relatively stable. But it's the big change really has been in the supply from federal harvest and the substantial reduction in economic activity that's affected the state as a result.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dalou.
When you interviewed those that are involved in harvesting forest, my question is, and my point of reference is Maupin, John Day, that area. When you talk to the large harvesters, the big industries, my question is, are they interested in federal timber when its availability is so volatile? It seems as though when we have a democratic regime, there's a movement for roadless wilderness. When we have a Republican regime, there's a movement to cut it all or whatever. With this instability and availability of resource, is there any interest in our federal forest by the large cutters?
I'll start this maybe and just to say that from what we heard from the interviews that we conducted is that almost more important than the level of the harvest is just predictability about what it's going to be in the future and what the management is going to be. And that's critical not only for the mill operators and logging contractors and so forth, but it's also critical for people involved in land management, whether those are family-owned forest lands or whether they're large operators, because what's happening on federal lands is affecting the other landowners as well. I don't know, Leslie or Greg, if you have
People are reluctant to make investments if they can't count on a supply being able to feed the mill.
A stable supply. So my question to you and for us is, I guess I do have an interest in what the supply is, but I very much have an interest in guaranteeing stability to our producers. And on federal land, which seems difficult for us to get at, but I would ask you to tell Chairman Lim and the rest of us on the committee what we can do to stabilize or to help you stabilize that supply. And I promise you, most of us will run and do it. So when we're done with today, if we had some direction on how to stabilize that supply, then if I might, a follow-up question.
Yes, follow-up.
In my district, we had a lot of small cutters, if you will, producers. Will those people be able to reassemble or recapitalize their operation to take advantage of stability, or are our small people gone?
I think I think that's an important question. I don't know that the answer is that we know the answer totally. One thing we clearly found out in talking to the kind of the cross section of industry and other forest sector representatives is that the situation is substantially different on the east side of the mountains than it is on the west side. We clearly have seen, I think, a decline in the general infrastructure that it takes to support a forestry sector with the closure of mills and the disappearance of logging contractors, so that even now when you, for example, if you have a timber sale or a thinning sale, it can be difficult to attract contractors. So I think there are, and we'll see a little bit later, that that we do have some specific concerns with the east side of the state and the need for a little bit differentiated strategy to begin to rebuild that infrastructure, because it is not clear today that even if you reintroduced substantial new volumes that there would be players to readily take available to take advantage of that. It would depend in part on what the location was, what the material was, but there are some major infrastructure issues on the east side now.
Still, the key issue is stability on the east side also?
Yeah, I would say stability on the east side, and I think the other item on the east side is when there is stability, being able to achieve enough of a critical mass of supply so that it is economically possible and feasible for people to bid for and to be able to make use of the timber resources that's available, even if it's from thinning sales or other activities.
Thank you.
If I might, I could answer that question in a different way, too. For the record,
please state your name first, please.
For the record, Greg Miller, Weyerhaeuser Company.
Thank you.
And I'd just qualify it by saying none of us are up here our east side operators, so there is definitely a perspective that your committee could benefit by having some east side operators. But I would say that relative to stability, if as a body, if the Oregon legislature were to weigh in on the Northwest Forest Plan, the commonly referred to as the Clinton Plan, but the Northwest Forest Plan, that plan had set in its goal to harvest 1 billion board feet. That's significantly lower than where you see that chart up there relative to our potential off of federal lands, but it was a plan that was brought forward at the end of the 90s and could provide some of that stability. The difficulty is, as a state body, is weighing in on a federal issue and having much influence, but we've had a couple of things that have occurred. One is the Healthy Forest Initiative. If you were to fully fund that, encourage our delegation to fully fund that, and then also encourage the delegation to weigh in on behalf of the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management to implement the Northwest Forest Plan, I think you would add to the stability factor and provide some certainty for those operators out there that rely still today, that rely on public timber. You asked if large operators would go to that source, and I think a lot of the larger operators, I can only speak on Weyerhaeuser's behalf, that we don't have an interest in public timber supply. We've made our strategic decisions to rely on our own private forest lands, but there are other segments, other members of our forest segment that still rely on public timber, and I think those folks would continue to invest in their facilities if they could see that the Northwest Forest Plan was going to be fully implemented. I mean, that's 1 billion board feet that would add to their certainty. So that's another way to look at the issue. And I think most of that would probably would be very helpful on the east side of the mountains. There's another phenomenon going on over there, which is the selling of private east side private forest lands, and that's a pretty big concern over there as well. And I really can't address that per se, but that's another factor that influences capital investment in those facilities over there. But there are operators over there that continue to survive, and I think the Marcos Forest plan would be a good implementing it would be a good thing for them.
Could you explain to us what's the Northwest Forest Plan?
In simple terms, Chair Lim, it's the Forest Services and the Bureau of Land Management's, I think it's mostly Forest Service, federal forest plans for the national forests in the state of Oregon.
All right. Representative Riley?
Yeah, about the Northwest Forest Plan, can you tell us what are the problems, why it isn't being implemented at the federal level, and you maybe elaborate on that a little?
Chairman, Representative Riley, I'm not an expert on the whys, on the details of it, but in a 30,000-foot view, over the course of the last 5 years, there have been a lot, continues to be the conflict that you see that we're trying to avoid at our state, with our state goals, but there continues to be the environmental conflicts around how they implement that plan. And I couldn't tell you the chapter and verse, but whether or not the timber sales are meeting the environmental regulation, are meeting the environmental standards, and the environmental community continues to challenge through lawsuits. Mm-hmm. Just the whole process of getting those timber sales through the processes. There's been some efforts to try and streamline that, but in general, it's kind of the same old discussion that we've had for the last decade. So.
Thank you. Now, I can tell you in general, as you go out and talk to companies, large companies and smaller ones, there's frankly not a lot of confidence that that even with the some of the recent initiatives, such as the Healthy Forest Initiative, that's going to make a large amount of difference. So anything that does happen on the upside is really something that most of the existing companies are not counting on, at least at the present time. There's just, as I say, a fair amount of skepticism. But let me talk a little bit just about the kind of the economic impact of the forest sector currently to the state's economy. As of the year 2000, which was kind of a benchmark year for us, primary and secondary products, with primary products being the mills and secondary products being the things like millwork and furniture manufacturing, and together with forestry services employ between 85 and 86,000 people. That represents about 4% of the state's job base. The industrial output is, because this is a value-added industry, accounts for about 6% of the state's total output. And if you put a multiplier on reflecting the ripple effect of this activity throughout other sectors of the state, the direct and indirect employment together exceeds about 190,000, which is just a little under 10% of the state's jobs, and actually more than 10% or 11% of the state's total output value in the range of $22 billion per year. So it is still a significant industry in terms of its economic contribution. A little more detail just in terms of the trends and where we're at. The chart on the left shows total employment by as of 2000 in the different categories of primary products at the top and secondary products, forestry services. Primary products is about 35,000 jobs. Secondary is about half that at 17,000 jobs, and forestry services fairly close to primary products. And forestry services encompasses a broad array of things, ranging from logging contractors to people involved working with forest land management, fire crews, and actually that's been, as you'll see on the chart to the right, has actually been an area of growth in the 1990s, unlike some others. Primary products saw a job loss of about 26%. That especially affected sawmills and plywood activities. There was somewhat less job loss in secondary products. That job loss mostly happened in millwork, much of which was on the east side of the state, but there's also been growth in a variety of other specialized secondary product manufacturing activities, ranging from prefabricated partitions to furniture activities, and just a wide range of activities that has helped to offset that and cushion that some. As you can see, there has been substantial growth in forestry services. It tends to pay less than primary products, but it has been an area of some job growth. This has occurred at a time where, if you look at the bottom, the state job growth through the 1990s grew about almost one-third. Now, the situation has changed in the last couple of years, where we've gone through a significant recession, and actually forest products has held its own better than some other sectors of the economy. You look around the state, the counties that are in the dark green, which are represent 15 of the state's 36 counties, these are counties where the forest sector contributes 50% or more of the traded sector employment activities in to the economic activities in those areas. And as you can see, those counties where the forest sector is still dominant in terms of wealth generation and creation of economic activity are centered in rural areas of the state, including Northeast Oregon, Southern Oregon, the Southern Coast, and the Northwest coastal areas.
Mr. Chair.
That Representative Riley.
Thank you. I'm a little familiar with the trade sectors from being at the Oregon business meetings, but maybe you can explain a little bit about what traded sector is.
Sure. Traded sector basically consists of the job activities that generate new economic activity, new wealth to the state, and they're because they're largely a products or services that are exported from the state. So in the case of forest products, from about 90% of the lumber and wood that's manufactured in Oregon is exported outside the state. That brings money in from outside the state. And that's a traded sector activity where we're bringing, basically exporting a product or service, bringing money into the state of Oregon. High technology would be another major traded sector activity. So the traded sector, we're really focusing on the portions of the economy that are bringing new activity, unlike, say, retail, which tends to be more serving the activity that's generated from elsewhere.
Thank you.
We just talked a little bit about wages. Wages are some interesting information. If you look at the top of the chart, primary products still pays very well, close to $50,000 a year, compared to all economic sectors of the state that pay a little under $35,000. Also, interestingly, there was strong wage growth through the 1990s in primary products and in forestry services that exceeded the wage growth for all sectors of the economy. So in the midst of a restructuring industry, we have wage gains that have been stronger for the whole Oregon economy, especially in primary products and forestry services. One other thing that we looked at in our economic analysis, getting really reflecting the question about the traded sector, is the degree to which this industry is concentrated in Oregon compared to elsewhere, and that's really reflecting a measure of the specialization and the competitive advantage that Oregon has had for forest products and the forest sector. With primary products, we have 5 to 6 times more concentration of the industry than occurs nationally. If you look at all the forest sector combined, we're better than 2.5 times more concentrated in Oregon than nationwide. With probably the least degree of specialization, as you can see, in secondary products, where we have some specialization but not significantly different than the rest of the nation. Now let me talk a little bit about the questions raised about economic clusters, and I want to talk a little bit about what clustering means and specifically what it means for forestry-related activities. Clusters basically are groupings of economic activities that extend beyond the way we've traditionally defined forestry activities. So as I mentioned, we looked at the traditional measures of this sector, which are primary products and secondary products and forestry services, which most would agree that really comprises the core of the industry. But the reality is that the forest sector reaches out, historically and today, reaches out into many other sectors of the economy in terms of equipment vendors to the industry, including other suppliers, including lumber and commodity brokers. There's a broad infrastructure that supported this industry that reaches beyond just the people that we measure that are directly employed in forest products and the forest sector alone. It really is a case where the whole is greater than the sum of the parts, and the way you look at this product cluster is important to identify how does Oregon maintain a competitive advantage relative to all the other places now in not only the U.S. but the world that are producing forest products. To kind of illustrate this a little better, this is actually some work that Eric Hansen at Oregon State did. The dark blue in the center really represents what we traditionally think of as the forest sector. So we have forest and forest owners, people involved in land management, timber harvesters, primary and secondary manufacturers. In terms of the employment activity, that really represents the core forest sector as we've traditionally defined it. But you reach out beyond that and you begin to see a variety of other activities that are important to, that are important suppliers to and are customers of this forest sector, and includes things like university research and education. One of the things we heard in our interviews, for example, is the extreme importance of Oregon State University being on the cutting edge of research, both in terms of forest management and identifying new products. We have information technology is another area, IT providers, consulting companies, equipment manufacturers. Equipment manufacturers probably at Oregon had a stronger role historically than it does today. We had companies like Hyster that developed in Portland and is now relocated from Portland to Dallas, but that was a company of heavy equipment for the forestry sector. Another company that was a long-established name would be Omark Industries. Examples of companies that really sprung up to supply the Oregon forest sector, but also helped to shape competitive advantage for a broader set of economic activities that were important to the whole state. And I think as we move forward, and I'll talk a little bit about where we're headed in the future, beginning to try to identify how this cluster advantage can be maintained and reestablished becomes a key part of the strategic importance and what the opportunities are for the future.
Mr. Chairman, a question.
Representative Dallon.
Yes, we lost these secondary industries, Hyster and Omar. Again, I'm going to ask, is there anything that this legislature can do? Is there a reason they left that we can address? Is there a reason that if we were to get another Omar or another Hyster that we could hold them? Is there something we can do to guarantee Oregon jobs? I'm not so much interested in what we're doing right or what we're doing wrong. What can we do in the present to hold them here?
I think, as I mentioned, this really becomes a focus of the work that we're now just beginning to be engaged in. And that is the question of, can you really reestablish those competitive linkages and create competitive advantage for this state as compared with companies deciding that they're going to locate somewhere else. Now, it's a difficult challenge because we all know that we're operating in a much more global environment and companies can be extremely footloose in where they move to. I think it does point to, as we start looking beyond the core industry to these other supplier activities, we really have to look at the competitiveness of the state in a broader context as a business, good business location. There are some examples elsewhere, and one of the things that we're interested in pursuing further is the degree to which it's applicable to a state like Oregon, but there are examples elsewhere in the world of places like Finland that have had a strong forest cluster that has really been nurtured since the 1950s and involves the high-tech sector and others. There are also examples of states that are pursuing some cluster strategies related to wood products. So in for example, Vermont that's doing a smaller, very different industry, but there's some examples there, and we want to begin to learn from that and try to say, is there something that we can learn from that is important for a kind of Oregon situation?
One follow-up, Mr. Chairman.
Follow-up.
Do we do any sort of an exit interview with these people when they leave us? Is there a formal that the state does to ask them why?
I know that OECD has done that in the at different times. I don't know the current status of exit interviews.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's something we could follow up on. I would just like to mention that we are in the process right now of a follow up study that is focused on catalysts that could help the forest cluster in the 21st century identify important relationships, and part of that is looking at policies or actions that that the state could take to facilitate some of those relationships. So by the end of June, we hope to have a very focused new piece of work that will address that. We had the same question, and a focused piece of work that will address that question. And hopefully, the forest sector strategy that the Board of Forestry is working on will address that as well.
It may well be also that the cluster that was here historically, using the Heisters and Omarks as an example, may not be the cluster that reemerges in the future. And I want to just talk about that for a moment. Historically, some of the strong linkages to forest products in the state included forest products related to wholesaling. The manufactured housing industry really grew up around forest products in the state, although those linkages are much more attenuated today. Printing and publishing had some historical linkages, equipment manufacturing. Even today, those sectors employ about 32,000 jobs. They're not counted in our forest sector. Some of those linkages are much more attenuated. And frankly, there's the question of, are those the horses that you ride in the future, or are they different, or are they somewhat the same? Another area that somewhat links to forest clusters is the whole area of forest tourism. It's another area where we're conducting some additional research at this time. We know it's a sector that contributes a fair number of jobs, but at relatively lower wages. And there really is the question, and probably the main question from an economic value standpoint, is how do you bring more value to the forest tourism experience? And it'll be an area that we're addressing. I think probably some of the challenges that we've realized are that the forest cluster for Oregon is not much different from the clusters that have developed around high-tech, agribusiness, and some other traded sectors that are important to the state. We all face common issues. One is attracting educated workforce. One of the questions that I know was posed to me when we were conducting interviews of manufacturers on the east side of the mountains, actually was one that had been a manufacturer, is the question, the musing about, even if there was the supply of lumber, timber in the future, would I be able to get the labor force to reopen the mill and be competitive? So there are workforce issues in a variety of ways that are important, not only to high tech, but also to this sector as well, and the needs for an increasingly educated workforce. Efficient infrastructure and transportation is important in terms of getting product to market first to mills and then to market. Again, that's a significant issue, especially in areas on the east side where the infrastructure really is not as in place as it used to be. The competitive environment has changed dramatically in the last 20 years for the forest sector. That clearly has happened in other sectors of the economy as well, but with regard to forest activities, we now see major players in places like Brazil and China, New Zealand, basically the whole southern hemisphere. We're looking into innovative products and quick response. It's much more important for a company to be able to know that they can get something out the door tailored to the customer's specific needs. And so the industry is dealing with things like just-in-time inventory, like other sectors of the economy. Access to technology is important, and the ability to attract capital is important across the spectrum. So these are things that are shared by the forest sector with some of the other key business clusters in the economy. In terms of cluster partners, as I mentioned, the cluster of the future may or may not be the same as it was in the past. And some of the ideas that have really been generated out of the initial research point to greater opportunities for linkage between the forest sector and agribusiness in areas like packaging, recycling in areas like newsprint, transportation, this whole supply chain management, just-in-time inventory concept. Greater use of high tech in harvesting activities, especially in steep terrain and in areas with smaller levels of harvest and harvesting smaller timber to milling. Green energy becomes important for biomass, and again is an area of importance to the east side of the state as well as areas that have been other areas that are fire prone. As I mentioned, business cluster strategies are being pursued elsewhere, other states and countries. I gave the example of Finland, which has really been at this since the 1950s. It involves companies like Nokia as part of their forest cluster strategy that helps out with GPS for logging sorts of activities. It's really a very kind of tightly integrated type of structure. So the cluster, for the forest cluster for the next century, we're really looking to say what are the new opportunities and the linkages that we can kind of rebuild from existing strengths within the state, and then getting back to your question, what are the strategic policies or catalysts that would help to facilitate greater benefits to the forest sector and to Oregon's economy? We think we've got some beginning answers to that now, but we're going to be pursuing that, as I mentioned, over the course of the next several months. Let me shift gears, if I can, and talk a little bit about forest land management. Again, this is really coming out of the forestry program for Oregon. The forestry program for Oregon identifies three forest types of forest, reserve forest lands that are about 31% of the forest land in the state. They're older habitat and today are being managed for non-harvest objectives, and we don't expect that's going to change, with the exception of dealing perhaps more with fire protection suppression regimes and some thinning. There's multi-resource lands that include most state lands as well as federal AMA and matrix lands that are managed for a combination of environmental, social, and some limited harvest objectives. And then there are wood production forests that are about a little over one-third, about 36% of the forest land that is primarily industrial and family-owned, but also has protections for forest, streams, wildlife, habitat, and replanting. So one of the questions that we took on was the question of, well, consistent with existing forest plans, where could we really be from a standpoint of production, and is there the opportunity to produce more within the existing management context? Again, recognizing we've gone from close to 9 billion board feet in 1986 down below 4 billion, and we're now back in the range of about 4 billion board feet. We went out and kind of through a process involving several well-known forestry economists, came to the conclusion that 4 billion board feet, where we're currently at, represents the most likely outcome for the next several years. Most do not see any substantial change in current harvest levels. However, if you kind of say, well, let's look at what the upside potentially could be, again, the consensus conclusion is that we ought to be able to operate somewhere perhaps in the range of 5 billion board feet, perhaps more, perhaps less, depending upon a number of management decisions. What is interesting about this is if you look at the bottom portion of the chart, wood products forests today count for close to 4 billion out of the 5 billion board feet, almost 80% of the total production, and that would be continued to be the case in both the most likely and in the long-term sustainable view. The greatest increase probably still comes from wood products, especially in terms of family-owned lands where there are multiple harvest objectives, some additional potential multi-resource, including state lands, and a relatively small additional harvest indicated, a very small fraction of the total coming from reserve lands, mainly from additional thinning and fire suppression activities. We did look at a wide range of scenarios. I won't go through these in detail, but we tried to look at what are the effects of varying, for example, production levels on state lands, either going from multi-resource to full production category or the opposite way, from multi-resource to reserve. We looked at some similar scenarios with federal lands and O&C lands. The implications of that from a job standpoint are shown by the chart on the right. They indicate that the baseline scenario, if we could get from 4 billion to 5 billion board feet a year, that would mean about another 20,000 jobs associated with that 1 billion board feet. As I say, much of that coming from private lands, but also some from federal and state lands. We then vary the scenarios from that baseline, and it moves up and down, and the range is from the most conservative scenario, which would have federal lands, actually state and federal lands decrease, shown in scenario G near the bottom, of an increase of only 3,700, to a maximum case where you get the maximum productivity from state, federal, family-owned lands, consistently again with existing policy of 33,000 to 34,000. So I think going back to one of the earlier questions, even with the existing management plans on the books, there is a wide range of where we could actually end up in terms of harvest levels. And so part of the challenge for the future is not necessarily changing management plans, but is saying what can we do to better implement what's already on the books. I'll try to move through some of the rest of this a little more quickly. Just talk some of the strength as part of our work We identified key strengths of the forest sector. Probably one of the more interesting ones, I think more telling ones, is that market proximity has become more important to the Northwest industry, much more focused geographically on California and the Southwest U.S., much less on foreign markets right now, and much less in other areas of the country, as the Southeast has become a much bigger competitor, although there are exceptions. But that's been a general sort of story. We benefit from productive lands, high environmental standards, a relatively skilled labor force, although there are a number of issues on the horizon because it is an aging workforce and because it's a workforce that now has been largely depleted in some portions of the state. We have world-class research capability. Infrastructure, especially on the west side, it remains strong. And I think one of the kind of the hidden assets really for the state is we have a public tradition, including our land use laws, that have been more protective of forest lands than has been the case in some other states, for example, the neighbor to the north, the state of Washington. There are a number of barriers related to competition, supply instability. This whole continued kind of conflict between market and non-market values that leads to uncertainty about supply, and the items that I mentioned in terms of loss of east side infrastructures being major barriers. Probably the most significant remaining gaps are the need for public acceptance that the forest sector is still integral to a balanced, high-performance economy for the state, and then for action that makes a difference. The sort of things that you're talking about are interested. How can we move the forest cluster forward in a way that serves both economic and environmental objectives? Some context for realizing the opportunities. The number one thing that we hear is that global production is a fact of life. Production actually is likely to outpace demand in terms of total wood fiber in the world. There are going to be more intense cost pressures. This will lead to these divergent approaches that I talked about earlier for both commodity and specialty product activities that are going to be taking place simultaneously out there as different companies try to find their niches and their competitive advantage in different ways. We have continuing competitive strengths in terms of the productivity of our forest, our infrastructure. Those are offset by the harvest risks and the competitiveness questions that I've mentioned. I did want to talk just for a moment about certification standards, which were a focus especially of Professor Eric Hansen's work at Oregon State University. I think our conclusion is that certification standards are proving to be important in some cases for market access, especially the major big box stores like Home Depot and Lowe's, where customers, where there's clear recognition of the need if you're going to get access to those for certification programs. But it does not yet appear to be achieving a market premium in terms of the price that the customers are actually willing to pay for that product. We do think there's opportunity for a potential for Brand Oregon concept for sustainability and quality, but there's a lot of additional work that needs to be done there, especially given the notion that you're trying to figure out how do you differentiate a commodity product in a marketplace, you know, when somebody going to Home Depot in L.A. or Chicago has a number of different choices to choose from. There are a whole number of things that are on the potential agenda for where we head in the future, and I won't go over all of these. Let me highlight just a few. One is at the top left is the expanded cluster view, which is going, as I mentioned, beyond just the forest sectors we've traditionally defined it, to begin to build these new relationships, and that's a major focus of where we're headed in the next year or two. I think other areas that are important would be the diversity and efficiency in wood products manufacturing. The Wood Innovation Center that is now coming to a fore is one effort in that genre to utilize the research skills of OSU and to begin to continue to be on the forefront of innovation on the product side and on the manufacturing side. Better understanding forest tourism is another area that we're beginning work in to better understand and determine how do you get more value out of forest tourism-related activities and how is that affected and how is it sensitive to forest management. One other area that's important and I think was identified as critical by the OFRI Board of Directors, and which there is a third area really of additional research, is beginning to better understand forest growth and excessive harvest. If you recall the earlier graph, The biological potential of Oregon's forest is somewhere about around 10 billion board feet a year. That's the that's kind of the maximum that nature generates if you were producing an effect for harvest everywhere. That's what the growth potential is. When we got from a position, as I mentioned, where we were harvesting at about 80% of that biological potential to now where we're down around 40%. And one of the questions is for the future, what does it mean to be harvesting at such a low level compared to what the potential is? What does that mean in terms of fuel loading? What does it mean in terms of habitat values? And what are the options in terms of how you begin to manage that, with federal lands really being the major kind of swing variable in that? Which gets to policy initiatives related that might be outputs of this, that related to things like federal protocols for fuel harvest, fuel reduction and harvest activity, more thinning, that may not in some cases have great commercial value, but it is important in terms of overall risk management. Eastern Oregon is an area of special emphasis. I mentioned, we've talked about several times in terms of job-based infrastructure, the whole issue of risk management, and innovative opportunities. It's clear that because we're not, in many cases, we're not going to be getting economic value because the harvest is not going to be large enough, we have to create new markets for things like biomass if we're going to be doing a responsible job in terms of managing the forest as well as creating some value from that resource. So where do we go from here? Leslie really highlighted this at the beginning. Number one is the need for a four-sector economic strategy that reaches out and embraces a large a group of players: Oregon Business Council, Oregon Forestry Industry Council, OFRI, the Board of Forestry, and others, and that's now just beginning to take shape, including and also the Oregon Economic Community Development Department. We've had a couple of decades of industry, environmental, community turmoil. We have made progress, though. I think polling increasingly shows that Oregonians want some balance of economic and environmental benefits. We have the new forestry program for Oregon that looks at the three categories of forests and how can we manage each of them for their distinct goals. And we have a growing consensus for active management to meet environmental and economic needs. The next steps are to continue to move beyond this conflict, to find these new linkage and cluster relationships, and to recognize that innovation is going to be the key to competitiveness, which again emphasizes the need for initiatives like the Wood Innovation Center. These are, again, just a recap of the things that we've talked about. The phase two initiatives, again, as I mentioned, we're really focused now on some further work in forest tourism, understanding the clusters and growth and mortality issues is major initiatives that were identified by the OFRI Board of Directors. I think the final thought I would just offer is that if there is a conclusion that comes out of all this, it is that forests are integral, they're instrumental, they're key to diversify to a resilient 21st century Oregon economy. It is interesting that we cite here a piece from the Oregon Eugene Register Guide in August of 2004, recognizing that forest products remains an economic mainstay. The timber industry hasn't gone away in Wayne County. Actually, the forest product sector has proven to be much more lean and resilient and less vulnerable to boom and bust than reliance on high tech. In some ways, Wayne County made it through the recession better than the Portland metro area, which again I think is an indication of the importance of not putting all your eggs in one basket, but continuing to build on existing strengths, which is represented by the natural resources sector, including forestry. Appreciate the time. We've had a chance and some dialogue along the way, and I'll stop here and be happy to take questions or comments that you might have.
You're talking about support, stability, and settling turmoil and conflict. Is there a venue where we bring all of those with forest interests to the table so that if we develop a stability plan, all subscribers will come to some sort of consensus? Do we have a venue?
That's the $64 question. I'll defer, I think, to Leslie to at least start that up, because I think that really is the challenge in terms of where we're at now.
And I think that is the Board of Forestry's role, and it is their job to address the environmental, social, and economic contributions of forests to Oregonians, and to pull folks together, pull the public together and the industry together behind that vision.
I would just add that the governor's speech before the Board of Forestry in October of 2004 kind of set the stage for that, and I think he has given them the authority to move forward to try and also embrace not just the private state side, but also try to address the federal forest side of the equation. So if by some stroke of genius and magic they pull that off, that is absolutely the best venue that we could hope for, because that is the policy making body and the regulatory body that the forest products industry responds to. So I have the next segment, but I don't want to intercede in terms of questions if there's more questions for Eric.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Well, Representative Bruin.
Being careful.
I'm a freshman, obviously. thank you, Mr. Chair. I want, Mr. Hobie, thank you for your comments. I want to go back just a little bit to your shared challenges section, if you will. And it's the bottom point you have on there. It's the ability to attract capital. It's a particular hot button or point of interest for me. I guess my question to you is to expand on that a little bit in your opinion. What can we do to improve our ability to attract capital? Or conversely, what are we doing or not doing that is a disincentive to attracting capital into Oregon?
I think I can just begin to get that started. I don't know that I know all the answers to that, but I think the capital needs of the industry are different depending upon who the players are. Obviously, they're different for a small manufacturer of wood flooring than they are for a large global a company. I think for the smaller companies, being able to that are doing a more niche products, accessing capital is first dependent upon good sources of supply, and dependent upon some kind of stable market relationships as well. So just working through kind of the continuity that is important to being able to be able to go out and to get financing. I think for at the kind of the other end of the at the other end of the spectrum. For some of the larger players, you know, if you're a global company, you really are looking at Oregon in this, whether you're a manufacturer or whether you're a land manager, you're really looking at Oregon in the context of a portfolio of opportunities that comparing Oregon with other places where you could be growing timber or harvesting timber, and I think there. You're looking at a whole web of things that influence and affect the way the return on investment you're going to get. And so there are really two questions. One, what's the overall return on investment you're going to get? And second, how stable is that return going to get? And knowing that with forest products, more so than probably just about any industry I think you can imagine, your time horizon on that return is a much longer time horizon than it is for most things. So you're looking to a time horizon of 40 years or 70 years or something else, and so having enough predictability about that time horizon makes an extraordinary difference in terms of how you decide to manage the land on the ground today and the decisions that you make about harvest today. So,
thank you. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but in your opinion, does the fact that Oregon has the nation's highest capital gains tax rate hurt us in this regard?
I think that's probably one piece of the equation. I mean, it's, you know, you can take any little piece and you look at that in isolation. It certainly is probably that piece by itself is not a strong benefit. But you need to look at it in the context of all the pieces, and you need to decide that when you get to the bottom line and all the pieces that it is that you're competitive, and that's one piece that is important to look at.
I might answer that in a little different way. I think from a policy standpoint. Attracting capital, at least from a company the size of Weyerhaeuser, we look at the entire business climate for the state. So it's tax structure, it's the community we're looking to locate into, it's the regulatory climate, a whole host of factors that we would stack up and look at our other operations, say in the southeast part of our ownership, or whether we have to go international closer to markets, where the markets are going. A real classic example, we have a subsidiary known as Northwest Hardwoods. Well, they produce hardwood lumber for the furniture market. As the furniture U.S. furniture market, as the U.S. furniture manufacturers have started to move their operations in other parts of the world, we have had to take our business and follow that business over there. So we have a very active hardwood lumber segment within Oregon through Northwest Hardwoods for Weyerhaeuser Company. And by keeping our eye on the movement of that industry, that segment, that for the excuse me, I hate to stumble here, the furniture manufacturing segment, by following them. For this, in this example, the U.S. manufacturers are going to China, labor costs, etc., a market over there in China, and then they come back and sell the furniture back over here as well to American consumers. So we have moved our and followed our customer base over there. So Oregon is a good place to do business for Northwest for hardwoods because we have a fairly abundant supply of hardwood species, and we would still stay in Oregon for that particular segment. But we have to keep our eye on the ball for the international market as how those manufacturers move and where they go. So that's another way to answer. If I could, my role is to look at, from a company perspective, these economic clusters in the forest sector. And so if I could just take a minute and take a commercial break for you, for Weyerhaeuser Company, and give you a quick profile of Weyerhaeuser in Oregon. We were established in 1902 here in this state, and we have about 4,600 employees. We have about 30 facilities throughout western Oregon. We have about 1.1 million acres of forest land in western Oregon. And you can think of that in terms of the north coast area down through to Coos Bay, over through Douglas County and Lane County, into the foothills of the Cascade, and then also here in west of Marion County, west of Salem in terms of Clackamas and Marion County. So we have a fairly large reach in terms of our ownership. And from 1999 through 2003, we made about $250 million in major capital investments here in the state. I have presented you with some testimony that I'm not going to read all the way through. I want to go quickly to a couple of questions that came to mind, and that is, as we talked about here, is how do we take advantage of Oregon's forest sector? How do we partner with other economic sectors to leverage our geographic position, which is the West Coast and the Pacific Rim? And then finally, to remain a world leader in wood product innovation and sustainable forestry. And finally, how do these cluster relationships help with our competitiveness? So hopefully over the next few minutes, I'll be able to lend some perspective on that. On a broad scale, I think you have to look at how we can effectively leverage our current economic and environmental market advantages by looking at four areas. One is energy production. Another is transportation. A third is regulatory streamlining. And fourth is workforce education. I'll go back over these. I think if you look at investments in those four areas, that is a way for us to leverage, as you heard, this very positive story about our forest sector and how we can continue to take advantage of that. So our manufacturing infrastructures across all sectors have to have low energy rates to remain cost competitive and effective. And our forest sector is uniquely positioned to create energy from a renewable, sustainable, and green source. And we mentioned in the report forest biomass from our production waste and thinning dead and removing down trees from the forest, and that's a fantastic source of energy. We should also be able to implement what we call combined heat and power systems that significantly reduce our use of fossil fuels by using heat and steam in our manufacturing processes to capture energy efficiencies in manufacturing processes. The way we get there, though, is we have to have a coherent energy policy in this state that recognizes a strong partnership between the industrial customers and suppliers. And for example, in our Albany paper mill, we have a cogen facility down there where we produce our own energy and we sell that out over the market. We have a partnership with Pacific Corp, but we have to be able to advance and enhance those kinds of partnerships for us to leverage that potential. And I also believe that, and that partnership I spoke to has to be with our utilities. And there are some barriers to that partnership. So as a policymaking body, as the legislature, as the PUC, and as the governor are a part of this, we have to look at a coherent energy policy that allows us to leverage our particular sector. I think there's no other sector that's uniquely positioned as we are in terms of being able to provide a source of energy. More can be done, and the governor has taken a step in that direction through his Department of Energy, but I think we could do more. I mentioned transportation in last session. Those of you that aren't freshmen remember the transportation package that advanced through this body, and that really improved our roads and bridges, and we're still working on that, but that lends to truck mobility, which allows us to get our products out onto the highway system. Another opportunity we have this session is the Connect Oregon, where we're looking at investing in a multimodal transportation for railroads, air, and marine facilities. We really got hit hard in our containerboard packaging and recycling business when we lost container business up there with the Port of Portland. We now have to truck up to Puget Sound. The more we can find ways to improve our port facilities, whether it's the Port of Portland, and I'm not going to take sides on the Port of Portland or Astoria or Coos Bay, but wherever we can expand our port facilities will lend, will help us with our transportation costs. The more we can bulk up and have efficiencies there, the lower the costs. And so, I mean, those are kind of no-brainers. But if we can look at the Connect Oregon package as a way to take another way to leverage our forest sector, that's something this body can do. And I think we'll find a lot of folks putting their shoulder behind the wheel for that set of lottery-backed bonds, and that's something that is seriously considered. I mentioned regulatory streamlining, and we have to find ways to reduce the burden of duplication, sluggardly processes, and unnecessary paperwork within our regulatory processes. And I don't mean rolling back regulation. This thing can be bookend with larger companies having more resources to work through regulatory processes, but I am more sympathetic to the smaller businesses where they don't have the resources to work through those things, and the more we can make our regulatory process for both new, mature, small, big businesses to be more of a one-stop shop where we can quickly determine who, what, when, where, and how, that is going to add to our ability to be more cost-effective, and that's something this body can deal with as well. You folks write the laws, and then you also have the opportunity for oversight with the state agencies to help them interpret those laws, and so that the regulations that come out of those, once they promulgate the regulations, that they make sense and they're doing what you intended them to do. So, in this instance, the governor started that work last session, I think somewhere in that neighborhood. And that's the right emphasis, but I also believe that more focus would be welcomed in that area. And the fourth one I mentioned was workforce education, and we put a lot of emphasis in this body on K through 12, and rightly so. But I would also say that as we continue to utilize high technology in our business, and I didn't mention at the front end about high tech, but I'll get into it just a little later. We have to have a workforce that has skill sets that allow them to take advantage of that high technology. So anywhere we can find investments into the community college programs, those seem to be the best pipeline to feed into our workforce in terms of bringing their skill sets forward to meet the high tech innovations. So if I could drill down just a minute into some of these new clusters, I'll have a couple of examples, and then I'll just summarize my remarks. And feel free to interrupt me at any time. Are we ending at 10 o'clock?
No, we're fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
As I mentioned, high-tech's the classic example for us. You can walk into any one of our warehouse or mill facilities, operations, sales, or administrative offices, and you'll be amazed at the computers, microprocessors, lasers, GPS. All of that is being used within our industry, and we are not unique. In fact, I would say that the family-owned operators in our state, mills and whatnot, have led the way in embracing this technology. So it's very important that the and that's a key point to, for our mature industry to take the next level of and take advantage of that high tech. It helps us with our manufacturing speed and efficiencies. And the reality is that we'll never lower our labor costs. We are not in a position to roll back labor wages in this state. So we have to find ways to be cost competitive. And then high technology is where we have been able to gain that leg up. I guess what I would detail a little bit is, for example, using the agribusiness as a way as to describe a clustered linkage. As the agribusiness grows and innovates in terms of food processing in this state and how they manage and how they handle their food, their new food groups or new food processing productions, that usually means new and improved packaging. And our box plants have to keep up with that innovation to meet that also that consumer demand. So I mentioned packaging, and a new way that we're thinking about adding value to the utilitarian box is simply to look at it as packaging as a complete system. Instead of just selling a box or a package, we will take the customer's product. We'll then design, preprint, manufacture, construct, stock, and deliver their product to the retail end user. And we call that the retail network experience. It's rather new for us, but we are actually, that is actually happening today in some of our Weyerhaeuser regional markets. And the classic, a good example, it's not agribusiness, but one that you might be able to relate to is, think about the end cap display for Eveready batteries. Eveready is not an expert in making cardboard end cap displays. They're an expert at making batteries. So the example is that we get all the batteries in bulk. We will package it, even including the shrink wrap and the cardboard that goes with it. We will make the end cap. We will print the end cap, design the end cap. We'll take it and stock the end cap. We'll take it to Walmart, and we'll put it in there, and we'll manage that inventory for them. So that's a way for Weyerhaeuser to add value to our utilitarian box. And that's, I think, a way to describe a new cluster, a new way to think about a commodity like the cardboard box. Someday our product packaging will have nano-sized computer chips embedded in packaging, and that will have all the necessary price, merchandise, and inventory data so that when it's scanned at the retail register, an item's vital statistics will be fed into a supply chain system from start to finish. There's no reason why Oregon couldn't be leading the way in terms of designing and implementing that kind of new technology. And so since I've mentioned nanotechnology, that's another example of where we think there's a new cluster relationship. And don't think for one moment that our mature industry isn't paying attention to nanotechnology. So one example of where it's already being applied in certain segments of our forest sector is, for example, nanoparticles for better inkjet printing on paper. Just the contact, and I'm already off my expertise here, so I'm not going to go down that road. But just think about it in that regard. Another way is modification of natural fibers to enhance their use for manufacturing processes. For example, nanoparticles help us reduce the drying time as we make paper, various grades of paper. Another instance where nanotechnology is driving innovation in our industry is things like nanoclay hybrids and they're of immense interest to our paper industry, and they may bring about different paper making processes. Okay. When you look at a company like Weyerhaeuser, we're not just lumber, engineered wood products, but we also make paper in a variety of ways. Nanoclay polymers show a potential for replacing paperboard wax coating, and we would replace that with nanoclay coating because it has a greater barrier property and even simplifies recycling operations. So another area where nanotechnology research is directly related to us is developing new and improved properties for lignocellulosic fibers, and such as those that we use in our mechanical or crafting, craft paper making. And we make craft paper in Albany and Springfield. So that's a way for us to look at making advances in nanotechnology research. So if we looked at a strategic view of Oregon and what might be driving economic investments, if you looked at nanotechnology and focused on the forest sector, we think that that'd be a great payoff for Oregon, and probably both double it for both the economy and the environment. And so maybe to sum up my comments, I would just say that I think the forest sector of Oregon is uniquely positioned to leverage our environmental advantages of wood that we grow on a sustainable basis. And here comes another commercial, if you'll indulge me for just a minute. Oregon's wood is both at once renewable and recyclable and biodegradable. It's the only energy required to grow. It's the sun. And wood offers a solution to global warming. Trees absorb carbon. It remains locked in wood products, paper packaging, and recycled content. And wood is also a closed system, in that whatever carbon is emitted during the manufacturing of our products, it's also absorbed by the new trees that we plant. So if we look at things from a very strategic and in a partner way, I think you'd find that Oregon's uniquely positioned to take advantage of our forests. So I need my commercial and answer any questions. Thanks.
Thank you. Any questions?
Vice Chair Mokley.
Thank you very much to all three of you for kind of portraying the broad elements. As a non-forester, I was trying to get my hands a little bit around this from a different direction, and that is to kind of understand this very small number from the federal forest lands, and even the projections at 5 billion board feet, it sounds like is only taking into account a possibility of 1 billion board feet from federal forest lands, which when one looks at the productivity per acre, that isn't a huge amount of acres as a percentage of federal forest land, even after reserves are taken into account. I think what would be helpful to me is kind of to see if you started with an inventory of the federal forest land and you set aside your reserves and you set aside your stream land barriers and other things that have become established, accepted, practiced, what kind of acreage is left and what kind of productivity exists on those lands, and therefore if you cut those remaining lands in a certain cycle, be it an 80-year cycle or 120-year or whatever the appropriate is to that breed of land, what number do you come out with then in terms of a sustainable, so kind of understand it from the viewpoint of forest cycles and available land and so forth. Because what we have here in your presentation is kind of an assertion of maybe 1 billion is possible, but the crude numbers might suggest more is possible, and I just can't get my hands around the issue from the way you've presented it quite.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. We actually went through an exercise, as I mentioned, with the forest economists to try to define, as I said, this most likely versus this maximum sustainable scenario. We had tremendous consensus around the most likely. Everybody said we're going to be about, for the next 10 years, where we're at today, around 4 billion board feet. We had less consensus when it came to what's the maximum sustainable within existing forest plans, and the range, frankly, was up to 6 billion board feet. We went with a more conservative number of an increase of 5 billion, and I think one of the main elements of that difference from the 5 to the 6, which is kind of if you're firing on all cylinders and you're doing it within the existing forest management plan, is really the variable of federal forest in whether or not we get to what was the goals of the Northwest Forest Plan. I don't think we had a more tempered expectation, because I'm not sure that we view that that's a strong likelihood, at least in the near term, but if we were managing all lands according to plan, including federal forest, the 6 billion would be the outside number that you could conceivably get to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'll just leave that kind of as a thing that I'd be interested in following up with you, is understanding that kind of how that math and calculus is put together, because I think when one has their hands around that and one starts to see the percentage of forest land that will be cut after you've set aside reserves, after you set aside streamlines,
you start to tell a story around which compromises can be forged, which is where we all need to get to. Thanks.
Reference to the Nelson, did you have any question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much, Leslie and Eric and Greg, for being here. Where are we compared to other states in timber harvest? What are the top three states in timber harvesting?
Our competitive advantage is not as strong as in the past. We actually did not do a lot of analysis comparing this to other states, so I'm not the best person for that.
I think we are still the number one timber harvester in the U.S.
Mr. Chair, if you could give us some comparisons to other states, I would appreciate it. You know, millions of board feet, maybe type of timber. And then, Mr. Chair, may I ask, what are the top three destinations for our harvested timber internationally?
Internationally?
Mm-hmm.
Do you mean in terms of finished product?
Any way you want.
Well, I would, in my opinion, it would be in the Asian countries, China and Japan, and then over in Europe, practically any European country. I mean, those are our big international markets.
A follow-up, Mr. Chair. But my concern is because when Evergreen shipping lines from, you know, left us at the port, I heard you mention this. And so I'm just, you know, curious, what's the volume that we're shipping to Asia and Europe?
I'm sorry, I couldn't tell you the volume, but having it. Beg your pardon?
Excuse me.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, it just seems like that's a great economic development opportunity for the state and, you know, to fill that so we have a, you know, a full intermodal transportation system. And I wonder if we could get some information so we could help push on that.
We'll do our best.
While I don't have specific numbers, I would say that one of the major changes in the terms of Northwest just distribution of forest products and raw logs has been that the Japanese market really kind of largely disappeared from the scene as a major purchaser of both raw logs and finished product. I think there's some skepticism within the industry about whether that market comes back because it's now being supplied from other sources. So it is not. There have been some fundamental shifts in that broad market. I don't have the specific numbers, but that appears to be a broad consensus of the companies that we talked to.
One last question, please, Mr.
Chair. One last question.
Perhaps you could tell us or give us some scenarios of how competitive we are worldwide, you know, as far as we talk about costs and how we need to be more efficient. But, you know, compared with whoever, I don't know who's supplying Japan now. But could we get some comparisons of the delta in the, you know, our costs compared to others?
It would really vary by the specific commodity, but I can tell you that it is strong enough. Let me give you an example of a non-Douglas fir product, ponderosa pine. Not nearly as much being harvested as in the past on the east side, but I can tell you that for the secondary manufacturers in the state now, they are largely dependent upon, many of them are largely dependent upon pine coming from the southern hemisphere like Chile, and very likely even it's been such a pronounced shift that even if we could start suddenly turn the switch on and start producing large volumes of ponderosa pine, it's not clear that those manufacturers would switch back to the Oregon product because of the cost differential. So I mean, they're both supply and pricing variables that are at play. If you look again more broadly just at what's happening in terms of global production, the major changes have been in the last 10 to 15 years have been the huge amount of additional resource that's coming out of the southern hemisphere, whether it's Brazil or Chile or New Zealand.
Uruguay.
Uruguay. And that's going to continue. And probably the other major variable is probably supply that comes out of Russia, where there's tremendous potential infrastructure difficulties getting it to market, but the Russians are, for example, a major support source of supply to the Chinese and to the Far East market.
Is that right? Okay. Mm-hmm.
Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One quick question. Thank you for your presentations. Who at the Board of Forestry is taking lead on the development of the forest sector economic strategy? Is there a single person that we can contact or perhaps even bring before the committee to update us as that is in development?
I think probably the state forester, Marvin Brown, would be the your best contact.
Thank you.
Representative Shalom.
I have for investment, and particularly in House District 59, Eastern Oregon, the list of things I'm off to do, type A personality. I now have my homework. Stability is the key to success in the forest industry, long-term stability. And to do that, I should support the Northwest Forest Plan, the Healthy Forest Act, the Oregon Forest Products Act, support stability and settle the turmoil and conflict here at home, look at the capital gains tax, again, develop a coherent strategy for long-term solutions to Eastern Oregon's problems, support Connect Oregon, support regulatory streamlining, support workforce education. Is there anything else I should add to my list?
Green energy. An energy policy for the forest sector, and I think you missed transportation.
Thank you.
Connect.
Oh, did you have Connect Oregon? Okay.
Thank you.
Get to work. Okay. I thought you had that last question. Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, when we so desperately need jobs, I always think it's great to do studies, but when we're critically in need of jobs, and we proved in the last legislature that, you know, if we could go logging, that we'd have 4,600 jobs immediately, substantially enhance our economy. And I'm just wondering what you're doing to convince the governor or convince somebody that we need to hustle and get logging, you know, to get these people, you know, some opportunity. Also help education.
Thank you.
All right. And a few questions. Concerning the export, to follow up the Representative Nelson's question, I'd like to find out the what percentage the forestry industry, what percentage we use in our state, what percentage goes to the other state, what percentage goes to the international. Mm-hmm. I think that might be somewhat helpful to us to understand. And then do you still export the log without processing it at this time yet?
Yes, we do. Certain landowners do. The private landowners.
Private landowners
export logs if the higher value is there. As Eric mentioned, the market isn't as robust as it once was. On the federal and state side, we have a ban for log exports. We do not export that source of raw logs.
Okay, so since it's production from the private land, the state have no control on that issue at all at this time?
No.
No. Okay.
And we hope that you wouldn't. we are unabashed free traders from Weyerhaeuser's vantage point, and contrary to myth, it is not a huge impact in terms of our jobs and manufacturing jobs here. Not to go into great detail, but bottom line is that you still have to have the logging function and the forestry function and the longshoreman function and the transportation function. You're still generating economic prosperity in that regard when you enter into the log export market. And the amount of volume that we are doing these days is pretty small.
Okay. It seems to me a key issue, as I'm hearing the testimony from you, it seems to me the sustainability of the log in the future. That seems like a key issue, but we don't have any clear answer. That the way it should be 4 billion board feet or 5, it's up to the 9 billion board feet, and we need to find out the answer, so we need to have a clear plan what number is sustainable for next hundreds of years? You mentioned it, you need the sun on it to grow, but usually how many is considered about 100 years to renew it? But it might be vary according to the tree, but what we have, the timber, that the how many years it takes to renew it?
Okay. Okay, not to get too far down the track on this, if I might, Chair Lim, the issue of sustainability, all of the numbers you saw in Eric's presentation, and correct me if I'm wrong, all of them can be viewed as sustainable levels. It all depends on how much land that you have allocated either through federal policy or state policy for management of those on those lands. So when we talk about 4 billion board feet, that's a sustainable number. We talk about 5 or 6, those are sustainable numbers because the acreage configuration changes. When you saw the pie chart there of one-third, 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 those numbers related to that pie chart is related to the acres that are available for forest management. And in the wood production land base, those numbers, the volume associated with that is sustainable based on each landowner's rotation calculation, or management goals for those land allocations. So that's one of the age-old debates that we've had over the 20 or 30 years I've been involved in this industry, is what is a sustainable number. And what we have argued on the federal land base is that as you look at the federal land pie, the National Forest and the Bureau of Land Management's acreage out there, every time you went through with an administrative policy or statute, for example, roadless areas and wilderness, when we took acreage out for wilderness and roadless acres, we reduced the amount of volume that comes off, therefore, so that we could provide a sustainable level. Every time you withdraw acres, you reduce the volume coming out in terms of volume production level. So I don't believe we're in any debate over these numbers of what is sustainable. It's just a matter of what management goals or options you apply to those acres. And we have said in this analysis, and Eric, you can correct me again, is that looking at the federal side of it, those are federal decisions and statutes, laws that are impacting those federal lands and only providing X amount of board feet for the state of Oregon. Every time we look at federal policy shifting, you could make a case that you could either increase or decrease the amount of volume that comes off those acres. So when we look at 1 billion board feet out of the Northwest Forest Plan, that's a sustainable number. And there are those of us foresters like myself who would argue that you could manage more of those acres and produce a little bit more volume, and that'd still be a sustainable number. Mm-hmm. So,
and follow-up question. I understand federal government has more than 50% of the state land. And do we have less compared to the other states? Other states about 50-50. Our state has federal government more land than any other state.
If you look at the federal ownership, federal forest ownership, I'd say we probably have more than most states, and certainly more than Washington, and probably more than California, just in terms of the forest land itself and how we're configured here. Federal ownership, the federal government has a tremendous impact on forest policy in the state because of their 57% ownership.
So what we have to do to get the money, to get the land from the federal government? What we need to do?
Well, sir, if I knew the answer to that, I might be able to retire early.
Okay, same here.
Okay. One follow-up. I want to make a very clear impression, though. If we have a federal policy that vacillates hither and yon, it's not a simple matter of allocating resources to recreation for forest products use or reserve. We have challenged then the stability of what our companies can do. And in the forest industry, long-term stability is paramount to investment. So we can't be hither and yon. We must decide what we're going to do, and whatever it is, go do it.
I think that's correct, and again, I would emphasize that's especially true on the eastern side of the state where there is not the buffer of the significant private acreage where we're having viable employment activity and just viable ecosystem management really is intrinsically related to the federal lands management question.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you very much. Could you tell me what portion of our land, or timber, is lost to spruce budworm, gypsy moth, fire? What is that a year?
I don't have the specific information with me. That information is available in some of the FIA inventory data, and we're compiling some of that now for the growth and mortality assessment that we're conducting.
So, Mr. Chair, could we ask to get a copy of that information?
Do you think we can get a copy of it? We do appreciate. Please provide to the each members of this committee.
Right. There's also information available on lands that are at high risk for fire, for uncharacteristic, at least severe fire.
Well, this has been a very informational meeting. I especially thank you, Leslie Lehman, for providing all this information through you, and we appreciate that very much. And thank you very much. With that, the meeting is adjourned at this time until Wednesday.
Thank you.
Thank you.